Blog Go Talk ahead. Radio.
Well, hello.
And here we are.
And welcome to Nonfiction, where in reality we discuss relevant topics of the past and the present. I'm your host, Robert Batista. Pre-code Hollywood, just the mention of that term connotates sex, sex, and more sex, with plenty of violence and even drug use added to the mix.
Oh, yeah.
With film names such as Street of Women, Safe in Hell, Children of Pleasure, Age of Consent, and Freaks. Today, I'll be discussing these salacious and daring films with my esteemed guest, Christian Young. Welcome, Chris.
Hello, everybody.
It's great having you back on. And
thank you. I was interested to see. We were just talking about this. I was interested to see that the code, the production code, which I had always thought came in maybe the late late 20s, didn't arrive until 1929. And then, of course, it was ignored until 1934, which is why you have all of these amazing movies. I totally, totally love pre-code movies. It's one of my favorite periods of Hollywood. I love the fact that, as opposed to later on, the women are so strong. That is just amazing to me. You don't have the namby-pamby ingenues. You don't have the sweet wives and everything. These are women that want what they want when they want it. Of course, sometimes they have to pay for it.
Safe
in Hell
is a
one.
Yes.
But I was just watching one that annoyed me so badly. The ending annoyed me so badly. I just had that steam come out of my ears, which is A Female from 1933 with Ruth Chatterton, who was a big star of pre-codes. And her career essentially disintegrated after the pre-code period, which is sad to me because she's wonderful. But she's a high-powered auto executive who produces, I must say, gorgeous cars. The cars that come off her assembly line are beautiful. And she hires and uses men for sex and then discards them happily, doesn't seem to have any conscience about it, until she meets George Brent, of all people, who is really dull. And, of course, they were married. Chatterton and Brent were married at the time.
Yes, in real life.
He must have had something in private life that just doesn't show up on screen. Although I like him in some things. I do like him in Jezebel and The Rains Came. But that's about it. He's fairly dull.
I kind of liked him in Babyface as well. I kind of liked him in that.
He's all right. He does liven up with Barbara Stanwyck. She gives him some life, I found.
Yeah, she brings out the best in all of her co-stars.
Well, yes.
True.
I don't believe she ever had a male co-star with whom she didn't have chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Maybe not Gene Raymond. Nobody has chemistry with Gene Raymond.
I don't think anybody can have chemistry with him.
No. But in general, I mean, she had chemistry with everybody. Even David Manners is okay with her. But
David Manners.
But I said the ending of Female drove me crazy. It's the a woman can't really take care, can't really be a high powered executive. So I'm going to give it up to you, my new husband. It's like. I mean, she's been the high power executive through the whole movie, and for as years before the movie starts, apparently. I mean, it's much better. The same basic scenario is much better in Man Wanted. Have you seen that with Kay Francis and the aforementioned David Manners, where she's a high powered magazine editor? And she goes through basically the whole thing, but she doesn't. she doesn't give up her position for him, which makes me happy.
Right, right. So Christiane, I also want to talk about a movie that you, one of the weirdest movies that Hollywood ever produced. I saw it on the big screen, Just think about this. It was a movie called Freaks. And it's
Oh my God.
Freak code movie. And I tell you, I don't ever really want to see that movie again.
Well, it's something
that I guess you have to experience once, you know, in your life.
You have to see it.
But once was enough for me. That movie was, it was just mind-boggling and mind-blowing, for lack of a better terminology. I mean,
It really is.
You remember
that
movie?
Oh, sure. How can you forget? I must say, I kind of like it. I mean, I don't really want to see it again because it's unpleasant. But in general, the director, was it James Whale that directed that? Anyway, I can't think of his name. But he's really sympathetic to the, you know, quote-unquote freaks. They're the good guys. It's the, you know, again, quote-unquote normal people who are villains. At least, you know, the woman, the one who turns into a chicken by the end. And her lover. You know,
that's,
I mean,
you
they are the villains.
Right here,
they're
folks,
the terrible people.
She turns into a chicken.
Well, she does. She does.
Yes, she does. She does.
But, I mean, I say they are the villains. They're not the, you know, we wouldn't call them freaks now, but, you know, what, differently abled, I guess. You know, not those people. They're the good people. They're welcoming. They're lovely. They're sweet. They're terrific. They're terrific people. And then they are just, the horrible, horrible blonde woman. I can't think of her name.
And Freaks could not be made today. It couldn't. Definitely not.
No. Not in a million years. I mean, it could be, but it would have to be some, like, you know, some version of secret thing. There's no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
Have you seen, talking about weird movies, have you ever seen Madam Satan?
I've heard so much about it, and no,
it's,
I have not.
DeMille,
seen
Cecil B. DeMille.
Yeah.
It is insane. The first half is kind of boring.
I hear a lot of people didn't like it, though, Chris.
Well, this is the thing. If you only see the first half, and it's kind of dull, but once these people arrive at this dirigible that is moored over the Central Park Reservoir for a costume party, insane. There's a chorus of clocks who are hitting themselves on the head with hammers. Madam Satan herself is, and the costumes are stunning. But, I mean, it's just the craziest movie. It just turns on a dime. Okay, from this kind of dull sort of, you know, soapy kind of drama to start with, and then it is a completely different movie once they get to the dirigible. You got to see it sometime. It's really,
it is worth seeing. That's definitely
you can even fast forward through the first part.
I might do that. But let's also talk about one of your favorites and mine, Babyface, with our good friend Danny, who, go ahead and, what was the line? Do you have any experience? And she doesn't hesitate and comes right back with plenty.
Deadpan, you know, plenty.
Yeah,
oh, I just
plenty.
Love her so much in this. I love this movie. I love it so much. Again, I would prefer it had a slightly different endings, but I'm not going to give a spoiler here because there might be somebody who's not seen it, you know. But I just love it so much. It's unusual in that her best friend is a black girl.
Yes, that's,
and it's
very
virtually
rare.
Never even mentioned that she's not white, except for one of Babyface's lovers, who talks about, I'd like you to get rid of that fantastic black girl, and she says, if Chico goes, I go.
It's
like,
exactly.
There you go, baby. Oh, it's fantastic.
So I got to throw this out there. And I just watched it, and I keep watching, and I think I tweeted this out. The more I watch Babyface, the more I am so intrigued by the Chico-Lily Powers dynamic. They were tight. They were close.
Absolutely.
As you just said, you know, she said, if Chico goes, I go. And she also said that to her father when he fired her when she dropped the dishes. Remember that? And she said, if Chico I go. So, yeah. So
that
this
whole
is
sequence
my question.
At the beginning is just, whew.
Yeah, yeah. And being that we're talking pre-code and we can talk about anything, this is, I think, my theory. I believe that Lily and Chico were lovers.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
I
wouldn't
they
be
were.
Surprised at all.
And let me tell you why. We know
they're certainly
we know Lily's exactly. We know Lily would do anything. We know she was definitely out there. You know what I'm saying? And the way they look at each other sometimes, especially when they were sitting at the kitchen table, and she says, do you want me to make you something? Remember she said, you want me to get you something? You know, when Chico says to Lily, I really believe that they were lovers.
I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, that's it's just, yeah. I mean, they certainly have great love for each other, whether it's physical or not. You know, they absolutely, they really love each other. Oh, I just love that movie. It's so good. It's so good. The best line about it, and it's it wasn't written about Babyface, but it's so appropriate to me. It was Mae West who said about one of her movies, you know, she climbed the ladder of success wrong by wrong. And I just love that line. It's so perfect
Mae West.
For
and
Mae
West had her pre-code movies as well, definitely.
Oh,
you know,
you betcha.
When she done them wrong and all the rest. And poor Cary Grant, you know. She had him twirling around her pinky. That was so funny.
In one of them, and I don't remember which one it was, she consults like a fortune teller. And the fortune teller looks in the crystal ball and says, I see a man. And Mae West goes, only one? I just love that. Love that. I love Mae West. I love 30s comedians. 30s comedians, I love them so much. Again, once it gets to the 40s, then it's like, why aren't they funny anymore? For me, you know, like I say, Red Skelton. Although I like Phil Sears in some things, but not in others, you know. But I said, they're just not funny. And they have these weird sort of like variety acts, like tumbling and juggling. And I don't get it. I don't get it. But 30s comedians, I mean, the Marx Brothers, Mae West, W.C. Fields, my God, I love them. I love them so much. They always make me laugh.
There was another aesthetic to pre-code, and it was the gangster film. Public Enemy, Scarface, Little Caesar.
They
basically blew up and exploded literally and figuratively, you know, on the scene pre-code. And up until then, to me, the gangster film really, you couldn't really get that much out of it because of the silent. There were a couple in the silent era. But the minute that the talkies came and you heard the bullets flying and the bombs.
Oh, my God, fantastic.
They really, really exploded onto the scene with Warner Brothers making the majority of them.
Oh, yeah. And I love them. And it's so odd when you see a gangster film from, like, MGM. It's not right. It's just not gritty enough. It's not, you know, it's not mean enough. And I mean, talk about your naughty stuff in gangster films. I mean, Anne Dvorak in Scarface. I mean, she and Paul Muni, that there's a very heavy, heavy implication of incest there.
Yes. Yes.
That these two have been lovers, you know.
Definitely.
Which is kind of amazing.
And I love Anne Dvorak.
No, she's fantastic, isn't she?
She is so good. And then we got to go back to Three on a Match Now, which is another pre-code you look at her and Dvorak in that film. I mean, Joan Blondell was fine and Betty Davis was fine, but that was Anne Dvorak's movie when they kidnap her child. and they're looking for her child. And at the end, when she's in front of that mirror, to me, that is one of the best acting I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing. She's absolutely amazing in it. And I love the moment when Bogey, playing, you know, playing a sort of minor henchman, comes in and takes one look at her and does the you know, rubbing his nose. She's coked to the gills.
The coke. Yeah, exactly. And
yeah,
Alan Jenkins,
she's great,
nods
in that.
His head and says, yeah. But, you know, speaking about drugs, that was another thing about pre-code, about drugs. There's a movie with Loretta Young and another male actor. His name escapes me right now. It's called Heroes for Sale. Richard Bartholomew.
That's right.
It's called Heroes for Sale, where he gets addicted to drugs due to him being wounded in World War I. And he comes out of the service addicted to morphine. And the film travels on how he can't find a job and his addiction, his morphine addiction. And I thought that movie really was very revealing for its time. I don't know if you saw it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. Pre-codes are just the best. They're just the best. I was going to tell you, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, another movie with Ann Vorjak. It's called The Strange Love of Molly Louvain.
Yes, I did see that.
Where Lee Tracy, who I love, the world's fastest talker, basically comes off as the stupidest journalist in the world.
Yeah.
That's a good one, though. She's just great.
Let's talk about a lot of the pre-code stars that we love, you know, and there's a lot of pre-code ladies that hit their heyday in pre-code, and then they faded, like Helen,
they just disappeared.
Helen 12 Trees.
Yes,
Helen 12 Trees.
Yes, Helen 12
Dorothy McCall.
Ann Harding.
Lillian Cashin. Ann Harding. Nancy Carroll.
Well, Lillian Cashin died, sadly.
Right. Nancy Carroll.
Nancy Carroll.
Really,
she's beautiful on screen.
I love Nancy.
Apparently,
she reminded me so much of Claudette Colbert.
Oh yeah, I can see that. I can see that a lot.
And then there was,
but
Madge
apparently
Evans
she was
as well.
Not liked. Well, Madge Evans lasted for a while.
Oh, she did. Okay.
But she never really made it to major stardom. You know, she never was a solo star in film. She was always the ingenue. And she's lovely.
So you're saying Nancy Carroll was not liked?
Apparently not. Apparently, she was quite unpleasant. And that really sort of hurt her career a lot. Yeah, I think she's great. I'm a big fan of hers, actually. And, of course, I mean, for me, as we talk about Ruth Chatterton and Ann Harding and Irene Dunne in pre-codes, you know.
Yes.
There
yes.
are
Loretta
so many.
Young.
And, of course, Stanwyck. I mean,
Loretta
Stanwyck
Young.
Is just.
Sylvia Sidney.
Yeah, Loretta Young.
But,
amazing.
Mm-hmm, matter of fact, she was in silent movies when she was like 14 years old, Loretta
15,
Young.
Yeah, 14,
you
15,
know?
Playing
yeah.
playing a,
exactly.
you know, a romantic lead.
Right. There was one with
and she was so
Long
beautiful.
Senior. Yeah, she's divine, beautiful.
Gorgeous.
But you know what? Clara Bow made one pre-code that every time I see it comes on, I have to see it. It's called Call Her Savage.
I
that
have never
movie,
seen that, and I've always wanted
oh
to.
Oh, my goodness. You have to see this movie.
She was such a live wire.
She was. She goes through the total gamut of emotions in this movie, and it is just a fantastic film, and she is so good, and she had so much talent, and I just wish that she would have made more talkies as well.
Well, I think she had some mental problems. She had, I believe, several nervous breakdowns. She, but she was wonderful. She was wonderful. These, as I say, these strong female characters,
right?
In pre-codes, this is what I really love. I mean, I love the gangster movies. I love the pre-code horror movies. You know, I love them. The pre-code musicals, this and the other thing. I love them all, but it's the women's pictures. One I really like. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Is called The Life of Virgie Withers. It's with Anne Harding. and Harding, and again, the baffling John Bowles. I don't get why he was always cast as this, as the homme fatale, as you might say. I don't get it.
But
he is great in
on John Bowles.
and the thing is, Anne Harding was a really interesting actress. She's very much,
yes,
a very modern style of acting. She, you know, she does. She's not melodramatic. It's very much. It's very, very modern.
She's always in control.
And Life of Virgie Withers,
she's
Virgie Withers is sort of a gloss on Backstreet. You know, in this case, it's a small town version, she's the mistress. She becomes the mistress of this local politician, and he sets her up in a hat store. And then everybody, you know, all the good ladies of the town, know, find out that she's this bad girl, and so they won't come and get their hats from her. So all the prostitutes do, all the hookers in town come around and get their hats from her.
Oh, that's
it's very successful.
Great. That's great. Oh, I got to see that.
It's
definitely
a really it's a good one. It's a good one.
Uh huh. Virgie Withers.
Yeah.
Okay.
The
yeah.
Life of Virgie Withers. I mean,
hey,
I'm happy to watch anything with Anne Harding.
Yes, me too.
Have you ever seen? It's When Ladies Meet. There's a pre-code version with Anne Harding and Myrna Loy. And then there's a remake with Greer Garson and Joan Crawford.
Anne Harding. Okay. I didn't see the original.
It's really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. I think it's much better than the remake.
Mm-hmm. Just like a lot of people feel the original Waterloo Bridge with Mae Clark
is better
than the Vivian Lee version. What do you think about that?
I like it better because, although I would switch out, I think Robert Taylor is miscast because in the original, the pre-code, 31, I think it is, it's Douglas Montgomery, who's not the world's greatest actor, but he's convincingly naive, you know.
Okay.
He's convinced. He meets her. He has no idea that she is anything but a ballet dancer or whatever she is in the original, you know. And it's convincing. Whereas Robert Taylor, you know, he's
pretty bored.
His character is in his 30s or so, and it's like, how stupid are you, you know? That you don't realize that she's not a good girl. Anyway, I don't like Robert Taylor.
That scene where she's walking through, what is it, the train station, Vivian Leigh? The train station. My God, it gets you every time when she goes.
Oh, Vivian Leigh is a wonderful
actress. Oh, she's one of the
best.
She's
a wonderful actress.
But you know what?
But
Chris did. How about the divorcee with Norma Scherer?
I don't like
Did
Norma Scherer
that?
In general.
You don't?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Did you see the divorcee?
But I like her. I like Norma Scherer in Silence and in Precoats.
Okay.
But once in the middle 30s, she becomes like the grand dame of MGM.
That's what they
and
said. And she
is,
was married,
you know, beautiful hand movement. And
mm-hmm.
I just do not like her after that.
Okay.
You know,
but she was good in
But
the
I do
divorcee.
Like her in Precoats.
I really enjoyed that movie. The Divorcee, I think, was
1930. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Yes,
and
I think
one
it is.
Line that always
I mean, that,
got me was when she tells Chester Morris, her husband, after she finds out he's been cheating, she goes into a room. She says, "From now on, my door will be open to anybody but you." I'll never forget that.
Yeah,
line.
I love that. Or I love that. I'm going to correct that slightly.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
correct
ahead.
That line slightly because she says, you know, she's standing in the open doorway and she says,
right.
"From now on, you're the only man my door is closed to," and slams the door. I just love that line. I memorized
Six
it.
In
so
one
it's such
hand,
a great line.
Half a dozen in the other. Tomato, tomato is exactly right. She said, in other words, get the hell out of here.
Get the hell out of here, you jerk off. You know?
You jerk
yeah.
off.
Oh,
exactly.
I just. Chester. I like Chester Morris. I like Chester
Me
Morris
too.
Sometimes.
Me too.
Have
we
you
got
ever
to talk
seen
about Red, Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen a movie with Joan Blondell where she's Blondie Johnson?
She becomes
the head of
a
group of thieves.
Uh-huh.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I love Chester Morris in it. And I tweeted out that once Joan Blondell carries and stars in the movie, she does not disappoint. Because you usually see her as part of an ensemble. You know, she's one of the supporting, in, you know, Footlight Parade and movies like that, Three in a Mask. But when she stars in a movie like Blondie Johnson, that opening scene where she can't get any money from the relief office and the welfare office, then she goes home and her aunt died, and the emotion on her
face. Mother.
Joan Blondell was the mother, right. Joan Blondell was such a great actress, and she was like a Swiss Army
really
knife.
Was.
She could do it all. She could do it all.
Yeah, I love her.
She's one of my favorites.
I just love her to death. She's one of my favorites. I just love her. Yeah, especially in Footlight Parade where she kicks Claire Dodd's ass out the door and says, as long as there are sidewalks, you've got a job.
You have love a job. And then she kicks her in the booty.
Yep.
Oh, that's so funny.
Love
she
it.
Is so great. But what about Redheaded Woman?
Oh, fun. A lot of fun.
Redheaded Woman.
This is the ending.
With our girl,
that's the ending.
Jean Harlow.
Just love her. Love her so much. That is the ending I want Babyface to have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but
you
said you wish that
Lily and Chico would have went to Europe and started just playing all the guys in Europe. That was you that
exactly.
tweeted that, right?
Fleecing every dope in Europe. Exactly.
Yeah, that was it.
I want Lily to get that other $500,000, you know.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been something. And always said they should have spinned off the Chico character. I would have loved to have seen Chico get her own movie with what happens after she left Lily. You know, and then let's go into her background, her family, how she got to where she was. I think that would have been and it's a darn shame that, you know, the race thing back then where you couldn't even think about having Chico as the star of the film, Teresa Harris.
It drives,
and she was
drives,
so good.
Such a
Teresa
huge waste
Harris
of talent.
So good. Yeah. Yeah.
Huge waste of talent.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of these black actors or Asian actors. I mean, look at Anna May Wong, you know.
Let's look at Anna May Wong. Oh, my goodness. Oh. I just feel so bad for her. Oh. So bad. She wanted the part in The Good Earth so bad.
Yes.
She wanted that part so bad. You know, they say when she tested for the role, she had the sound crew and the staff crying. She was so good, and they still gave it to
Louisa Rainer. Yeah.
Louise Rainer, who won an Academy Award, but
I've never seen.
I bet you Anna May Wong would have won.
Well, this is the thing. Of course, they said that they couldn't cast Anna May Wong because it made all the rest of the European actors, the white actors, look even faker next to a real Asian actor.
Couldn't have been more faker than Walter Connolly in that movie. you look at him and you want to throw up. Him as an Asian
human being,
I tell you.
Yeah, later on, like Dragon Seed, with Katherine Hepburn and Walter Houston and Elaine McMahon.
Yeah. Hepburn looks so. I don't even want to see the pictures of that movie. It's so bad.
And of course, talking about Pre-Codes.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Pre-Codes, then we have The Hatchet Man. With those eminent Asian actors, Edward G. Robinson and Loretta Young.
Don't forget The Hatchet Man. You can't forget that. That's another movie I would never, ever see again. You know, it was about the
tongs, crazy.
Right? The Chinese tongs?
Yep. Yeah. Edward G. Robinson is an assassin for the tongs. And then it's been so long since I saw it. He takes Loretta Young as a child. He takes her character as a child under his wing because his best friend died or I don't know, whatever. And then, of course, she grows up and she looks like Loretta Young with yellow face on. And so he falls madly in love with her.
And slanted eyes,
And he wants to marry her, but she falls in love with this jerk But they end up together, I think, if I remember correctly. Anyway, it's been a long time since I've seen it, but it was memorable. Possibly in the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, pre-code was just such an amazing time period. But I think last time we were on the show together, you mentioned that right after pre-code, when they stopped it, you said movies took a turn for the worse. Do you still feel that way?
Well, I think so. I'm not sure worse is the right word. They just were different. You know, they
in a negative way.
You know,
though,
women were not given agency, basically, unless they were, you know, the big stars, like, you know, Hepburn and Davis and Stanwyck and so forth. You know, but in general, the women were just sort of there. They were there to cater to the men. You know, they were the, say, ingenues, or they were, you know, mothers or whatever. And so it's different. I mean, there's nobody who loves more than I 30s and 40s movies. You know, but I just love the pre-codes.
One of the things I don't like after pre-codes was husband and wife sleeping in separate beds in their bedroom.
Ridiculous.
Oh my God, that drives me up.
Ridiculous.
That drives me up a wall. It drives me up a wall. And sometimes they try to put the beds together, but it doesn't work.
Of course. Even Nick and Nora Charles have to sleep in separate beds. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
you know that they
didn't
sleep in separate beds.
You know that.
But the thing is, and, of course, this is one of those rules from the code that if a man was sitting on a woman's bed, he had to have one foot on the floor.
One foot on the floor.
It's ridiculous.
Nope.
Completely ridiculous.
No kiss can be longer than, after the pre-code, no kiss can be longer than four seconds. Or something like that. That was another one. They couldn't kiss intimately.
Hitchcock got around that in Notorious. Is it Notorious? Yeah, in Notorious, where with that famous scene of Ingrid Bergman and Cary Grant kissing, a whole bunch of little kisses. You know, just short kisses. But it is one of the sexiest scenes in the world. It's just ridiculous. You know, and of course, no open mouth kissing. No.
And
of course,
no,
they couldn't
tongues.
Have miscegenation. They couldn't have, you know, prostitution.
Right.
They couldn't have any. It just makes me sad. Although, oddly enough, I'm going to say something, and people may think this is weird, but honestly, as far as I'm concerned, Billy Wilder, who is one of my favorite directors, writers, whatever, really benefited from the code. Because if you look at his stuff after The Apartment, it becomes, you know, when the code basically faded out, it's kind of vulgar and unfunny. You know, Irma LaDuce and Kiss Me Stupid.
One, two, three. Mm-hmm.
Well, I've never seen that.
Yeah, with Cagney. As a matter of fact, that was Cagney's last film until he did the one with Rollins.
Ragtime.
Ragtime, wasn't right. It? That was Cagney's last film. I think it was 61. 61. Yeah, Billy Wilder. One thing that I always laugh about, mm-hmm. I had seen Body Heat the other night. And I said, oh, Body mm-hmm. Heat is Double Indemnity with sex. Because in Fred McMurray, Barbara Stanwyck's Double Indemnity, there's no doggone way that he's going to commit murder for her if he doesn't sleep with her. So I figured, when did they sleep together?
Yeah.
And I said to myself, the night she bought his hat, remember she said you forgot your hat?
Yes.
And it was
yes.
raining, right? And then they were kissing and everything. He says, I love you, baby. I'm crazy about you. She says, I'm crazy about you too, Walter. And then they fade out, and then they start planning the murder. To me, in that instance, right after they said that, I believe that they would have put that's when they slept together.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
He's more crazy than I thought he was. at least William Hurt. You know why he did it.
Well, yes, exactly.
I love that movie too. That is so much like pre-code
to terrific.
Me, and that is such a great, great film, Body Heat, man. And Oh, man.
Fantastic performances.
I think he just passed away not too long ago, right, William Hurt?
Yeah, just a couple of years ago, I think.
Yeah, what a good actor.
Wonderful.
So, Christiane, I mean, it looks like the time has gone, and we just wrapped it up. And you've been listening to a new and exciting concept in podcasting called nonfiction. You can learn more about the Precode Era by going to precode.com, which is an excellent site for this fascinating genre. My guest has been my very great old Hollywood buddy and Twitter friend, Christiane Young, who can be followed on Twitter at ChrisOpera1. Is there anything else you want to wrap up and say, Christiane?
Nope. It's been fantastic.
It's
as it was
always
before.
Fantastic. Can't wait for the playback, and have a great rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.